Today we offer a warm welcome to Sabina Lear, the Immigrant Services Manager of the Intercultural Association of Greater Victoria, who is here to share some of her experiences as well as her insights, which she has gathered about the ongoing global refugee crisis. We look forward to hearing your story. Welcome, and thank you for being with us. We gather here every Sunday to hear stories, to share stories, and to catch a glimpse of the greater story that contains them all. And what is this greater story? In the words of the Lakota shaman Black Elk, it is the story of all life that is holy and good to tell. Of us two-leggeds, sharing in it with the four-leggeds, and the wings of the air, and all green things. For these are children of one mother, and their father is one spirit. Just as the sacred web of life is interconnected, so too are the stories we tell each other about that. So whether you came here today with a tale of sorrow in your heart, the excitement of an adventure recently begun, or something in between, know that your story matters. Know that it has power, and that we are all here to share in it with you. Now I would like to invite Susan Dearman, our cherished elder, to light the chalice of our faith. Now I would like to welcome Sabina with the story for all ages.
So I'm going to go down here because I think this is the story for you little people down here. So if I may, I'll just kneel here because I have a couple of questions that I want to ask you this morning. I'm Sabina, and I'm not going to try to learn all your names because I won't be able to remember them. The question I want to ask you is whether you ever had to leave your home in a hurry. Did anybody ever have to leave their home in a hurry? No? Never? You did? What was the reason?
Usually when I have to go to, the dentist or school.
Right, the dentist or school, yes. Anybody else? Yes.
Sometimes I don't go to the bank.
You're going to the...
bank.
To the bank. Wow, that's amazing, yeah. And then you're in a hurry. Yes, great. Now, can you imagine ever having to leave your home in a hurry and not being able to come back? Or not knowing when you might be able to come back? Can you imagine that? It's pretty hard, to imagine. If you did have to do that, what do you think you would take? Imagine you can only take two things. What would you take with you if you didn't know whether you could come back? Toys you would take. Great. What would you take? Your guinea pig. Yes. Yes.
Superheroes.
Yes. Yes. Great. A unicorn. Wow. Wow. I'll tell you the two things I would take if I had to leave in a hurry. What's that?
I don't know.
You don't know? It's my passport. This is my Canadian passport. Do you know why that might be important?
Why?
Maybe I have to cross into a different country, huh? Mm-hmm. And if I want to get across a border, it's really important I have a passport on me. You might not have a passport yet, but eventually you will. The other thing I would take is this.
Phone.
My phone. Why might I want to take my phone?
To tell people.
Yeah, I can tell people where I am, where I have gone. Yes.
Yeah, or you can go buy something. You can, at the doors, you can go.
Right. So these are the two things I would take with me. Have you ever heard the word refugee?
Yeah.
You have? Yeah. You have?
The movie called the BFG.
Okay. Okay, that's maybe something different. What is a refugee?
Someone telling that it has crossed over to a border.
Yeah.
Had a chance to go back to there.
Right. So a refugee is somebody who had to leave and cross the border, go into a different country, and they don't know whether they can come back. And why do people become refugees? Why don't they know whether they can come back? Any idea? Yes.
They may be escaping from war.
Right, yeah. Maybe somebody is after them. Maybe somebody wants to harm them in their home country.
Bad guys,
exactly, yeah. A superhero is needed, yes. So shall we all promise one another that we will be these superheroes who will help protect those people? We're trying to be these superheroes. Oh, Batman, yeah, I'm not up on these guys, yeah. Batman, exactly. Let's be Batman and protect those people who have to leave their homes. Super gadgets, right. Maybe we can use super gadgets. Shall we promise one another? You have very good ideas how we can protect refugees. So shall we all promise one another that we will provide shelter and protect refugees? Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks for your attention, and I'll let you go to your lesson or whatever you do now. Thank you.
Let us close our eyes, open our hearts, wipe our minds clean, and find that silent place within. Let us be still, and in that stillness, find the axis of our being, where opposites converge and we are made whole.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for inviting me to share a few thoughts with you this morning. Wonderful space, I've already admired it, so this is wonderful to be here. I would like to invite us all to start by praying or reflecting in the spirit of the book of Exodus in the Hebrew Bible. Mighty God, as you have guided the Israelites through the wilderness, be a pillar of fire by night to give light, and a pillar of cloud by day to lead refugees in search of new hope and new life. Bless our communities with a spirit of openness, that we may all be renewed and strengthened by newcomers. Some of you may have heard the African proverb, "If you think you are too small to make a difference, try sleeping in a room with a mosquito." So what I want to share with you today is my testimony and my personal witness account of becoming a mosquito and inviting all of us to become mosquitoes, an annoyance to the overwhelming sense of hopelessness and helplessness that we often feel in the face of unbearable suffering and pain that is happening in our world. Modern means of telecommunication and social media are bringing events happening in faraway places to our living rooms on a daily basis. More than ever before, are we in the know. We are witnesses to the catastrophes that are unfolding around the world. I'm sure that some of us are feeling quite overwhelmed by this situation as the superlatives are being hauled at us. The greatest humanitarian catastrophe since World War II. Or the highest number of people displaced globally in decades. For many of us, engaging with the enormity and the horror of these events seems impossible. And we ask helplessly, where is God in all of this? And we shrug our shoulders and busy ourselves with the many competing tasks that seek our attention on a daily basis. It is not difficult to find a reason as to why we cannot possibly burden ourselves with the responsibility of thinking too much about these global events and the people that are impacted by them. I think that we cannot expect an answer to the question of where God is in all of this, because it is the wrong question. The better question is, where are God's people in all of this. In his 2015 Lenten message, Pope Francis talked about the globalization of indifference. He said that we end up being incapable of feeling compassion at the outcry of the poor, weeping for other people's pain, and feeling a need to help them, as though all this were someone else's responsibility and not our own. So another question we may want to ask ourselves then is, how can we globalize compassion, which is the opposite of indifference? The Oxford Dictionary describes the meaning of compassion as sympathetic pity and concern for the sufferings or misfortunes of others. Another term that an antonym search for compassion brought up were caring and involvement. And once we talk about caring and involvement, we move from feeling something for other people to doing something for and with them. So how can we do something for and with the people whom we may only ever have encountered as a member of a largely faceless and amorphous mass of the displaced and the destitute? If you look at the graphic up there that I've chosen for today's homily, you can see that it's not as difficult as it may at first appear. Only 11 rows of 78 persons each may separate you from a refugee and me experience. So at this point, let me tell you a little bit more about myself. As Oliver has already said, I work at the Intercultural Association here in Victoria as the private sponsorship of refugees manager. I know that many of you are familiar or somewhat familiar with Canada's private sponsorship of refugees program because your congregation is also involved in sponsorship. And I'm sure that you all remember the image of drowned Syrian child refugee Alan Kurdi lying dead on a beach in Turkey. Most of you will also likely know that this image in early September 2015 had a profound impact on Canadians. At first, I have to admit that I completely failed to understand why this was the case, because there were so many such images every night on the TV, in online newspapers, on social media. Parents carrying the lifeless and bloodied bodies of their children after bomb attacks. And some of these images, a lot more graphic than the image of this boy, which in comparison looked a little less disturbing. And in fact, the little body looked almost peaceful in his death on that beach. So I asked people around me, why this photo? Why is this so different? And many said, I have a child just like this boy, same age. And I understood the emotional impact, and yet there had been so many other images of children before which did not engender the same reaction. Then a colleague told me about his wife, who had not slept for several nights, then got up one day and said that something had snapped in her, and that she could not continue living her life in the same way with all the privilege that she enjoyed, while others were deprived of their basic humanity. And it was then that I understood that this was not simply another body of another dead Syrian lying on this beach in Turkey, but that it was our collective human conscience that lay dead there in the sand. Many of us realized that, together with this boy, we had to bury our indifference and ask ourselves, where are we as God's people in all of this? In the subsequent months, I dealt with the massive outpouring of interest by citizens in Victoria, as was the case across the country, to become involved in a hands-on manner and to sponsor refugees. In the application form that those interested in working with us have to fill out, I asked them about their motivations. And my favorite answer to this question was, I was tired of doing nothing. I was tired of doing nothing. This and other answers speak directly to the awakening of our human conscience, or we might say, global citizenship in action. Hearing the question of where we are as God's people in all this, and answering, here, I am here, and I am ready. There's nothing romantic or glorifying about this work. My daily work consists of meetings with individuals and groups of people like yourselves who want to sponsor refugees. And I carefully explain the complex process and answer their questions while trying to assess these persons' capacity, both financial and in a broader sense, to take on a refugee sponsorship. I also meet with people who have family members abroad that have become refugees and who are looking to bring these family members to Victoria. My work is full of ethical dilemmas, of contradictions, and stories of pain. There are many more people in need of resettlement than there are spaces globally. The total projected resettlement needs for 2017, for this year, as per the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, are over 1,190,000 persons. In 2016, the UNHCR estimated to be able to make resettlement submissions for about 170,000 persons this year. So that would amount to about 14% of those that are in need. And this figure is up by 27% over last year. The problem really is that rich countries, including Canada, are not willing to take in nearly enough refugees to address the global resettlement demand. As a consequence, selection decisions have to be made. You may know that the United States, under the previous Obama administration, had agreed to resettle 110,000 refugees this year, and that the new administration reduced this figure by 60,000 through a stroke of the pen. What this means is that we are currently likely down from about 40% with regard to meeting the need for resettlement spaces to about 10%. I've just returned from Ottawa, where I had meetings, among others, with UNHCR representatives, and they are exceedingly worried. Because of the shortage of resettlement spaces globally, the UNHCR has to make selection decisions of who gets to be resettled. Canada and other countries also make such decisions. Sponsorship agreement holders across Canada, like my organization, make such decisions. And at the lowest level, I make such decisions. I am involved in deciding the fate of refugees. It's an aspect of my work that haunts me. This is my personal ethical dilemma. One of my colleagues calls it playing God. I try not to think about it that way because it is not a game. A while ago, somebody said to me, "You just have to think about it in this way. You are on the good side of human smuggling." Yes. Maybe. But just as the bad smugglers, I still decide who gets in the boat and who does not. You may also say, what does it matter if I sponsor one single person, given the staggering numbers of displaced persons globally? Statistically, it may mean nothing, but rest assured that it means the world to the person in question. And then there are the contradictions. There is a considerable number of people out there who find it convenient to play off one vulnerable population against another, the homeless population being the preferred target. The argument goes like this. Before bringing in refugees, we should look after our homeless population. Note that the emphasis is on the word homeless, not on the word our, thus neglecting to realize that refugees are also homeless. One such person phoned into a radio show on which I was once interviewed at the beginning of the Syrian movement to Canada, and the person suggested that the dead body of Alan Kurdi had been photoshopped onto the Turkish beach as part of a big conspiracy. We must never think that doing social justice work is about doing this over that, but doing this and doing that. And then there are the stories of pain to which I listen, and they are too numerous. The Iraqi woman whose family fled Mosul when it was overrun by ISIS, and the family told to either convert to Islam or be beheaded. A brilliant artist from Syria who made three attempts to get on a rickety boat from Turkey to make his way into the European Union. The family whose aunt and cousin were shot in the streets of a Syrian town and who narrowly survived. Families torn apart and living in different parts of the world with fragile status and little prospect of reunification. Family members here in Victoria who have not slept properly in many weeks or months because their desperate displaced families call them every night, causing the family here to become vicariously traumatized and developing feelings of shame and guilt over being safe while their loved ones are not. And then there are the incredible stories of connections. People's very own a refugee and me moments. A couple who assembled a group of 15 friends and professional acquaintances after meeting a refugee while traveling on business and deciding to sponsor him and his family. A Canadian working abroad, sending me a desperate plea for help for a refugee she had met and me being able to respond. Several groups of Canadians who simply accepted UN-referred cases where they knew little at all about the family to be sponsored beyond their referral number. I encounter such small miracles on a daily basis. People who screamed, "Here," when they heard the question, "Where are God's people?" And not all these people are people of any particular institutionalized faith tradition. Some explicitly identify as atheist. The other day, I had to smile when a sponsor group wrote into the settlement plan in the section on spirituality and faith, "We have no faith, but we'll connect the family with other families who can be helpful to make a connection to the worship community." I haven't yet had a chance to tell them just how much faith they actually have embarking on the sponsorship journey. So, regardless of how people self-identify, they are all spirited people doing God's work in the world. So let me come back to this graphic up here. It's taken from an article that was published in Maclean's magazine about 5 weeks ago, and it was entitled, "A Refugee Flood? Pull Yourself Together, Canada." The article actually did not deal with the resettlement of refugees, but it dealt with the people walking across Canada's border with the USA into Canada in slightly higher numbers than has been the case over the last few years. These refugees are properly termed refugee claimants in Canada, although they are also often referred to as asylum seekers. The author of the Maclean's article makes the point that it is futile to quibble about how these persons should be handled at the border. Rather, Canada and all of us should think about how we can best welcome them and integrate them into our communities. Related to this article is the all too widespread perception that these refugees are somehow deserving of a less welcoming response than those who are being resettled to Canada. But there are no good and bad refugees. There just are refugees. The Canadian Council for Refugees, or CCR, is a national nonprofit umbrella organization that is committed to the rights and protection of refugees and other vulnerable migrants in Canada and around the world. I have the honor and privilege to serve on the executive committee of the CCR. A few weeks ago, the CCR published a document which is entitled Welcoming Refugees at Our Borders, a Moral and Legal Imperative. In this document, the CCR urges Canadians to respond positively to refugee claimants arriving at our borders. We have the opportunity and the obligation to give protection to people whose lives are at risk and who come with the urgent hope that Canada will offer them security. Only a tiny percentage of the millions of refugees in the world will ever make their way to Canada, and we must protect those who do. People already involved in private sponsorship across the country are now stepping up to support these refugee claimants, as are settlement agencies and faith communities. Among those responding are people who themselves came to Canada as refugees. And I'm sure that some of you here in the room come from families where at least one member was once a refugee too. Scott Gilmore, the author of the Maclean's article that I've just quoted, said, "Imagine you're at a huge wedding, and on your third trip to the open bar, a Syrian kid comes in a side door and sits down. Are you suddenly feeling too crowded? Worried there may not be enough booze? Frightened?" These are some of the reactions that we're getting with the people coming across the border. The rhetoric that we hear in some places around floods of refugees pouring into the country or queue jumping and threats emanating allegedly from these arrivals are pure fear-mongering and lack any basis. When I gave a sermon on refugees in my own church about a year ago, the Hebrew Bible reading for the day was from the writings of Job in chapter 38, where verse 2 includes the line, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" In that reading, God mocks Job, the prophet Job, for his words without knowledge, outlining in careful detail all of Job's shortcomings. I think that we are not always listening very well when we are humbled and called out on our shortcomings. Quite to the contrary, we are calling ourselves scientifically Homo sapiens sapiens. This is Latin and means the wise, wise person, the wisest of the wise. And as we can read in Wikipedia, the ingenuity and adaptability of Homo sapiens has led to its becoming arguably the most influential species on the planet. It is currently deemed of least concern on the red list of endangered species by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. I beg to disagree. If we listen to some of the extreme nationalist and populist rhetoric that is taking hold again in our global community, and the complete disregard for those suffering in unbearable situations through no fault of their own, I think that this Homo sapiens sapiens is of grave concern in the eye of God, and that the collective conscience of humanity is on a dark red list of endangerment. So let us together make a big effort to save it. Let us shout here, loud and clear, when we see refugees and hear the question, where are God's people? Let us all become servant leaders in the protection of refugees. Thank you.
In the words of the Sufi poet Rumi, our task is not to seek love, but merely to find all the barriers within us that we have built up against it. In other words, our task is to break down the barriers that separate us so that we can find one another. And these barriers exist not out there in the world, but within us, in our hearts and in our minds. This is especially true of those invisible and imaginary barriers we call borders. That's what I meant to say. Seen from space, this pale blue dot, the only home we have ever known, is singular, whole, and undivided, without indication of sovereign states or nations. From this cosmic vantage point, there are no immigrants and no refugees, only residents of that city called Earth. Peace be with you.